right. Well, thank you. Everybody is still awake after the lunch? Good. All right, stretch. So just by way of background, I'm on the advisory board for Ethereum. I'm also an investor, an entrepreneur, a blogger, and I spent a lot of my operational experience in marketing, which is why they asked me to talk about the Ethereum narrative. And to do that, I thought I would start with a bit of history. Since you've heard the history of the blockchain this morning, let's just review a little bit the history of Ethereum. And it started with Vitalik in November of 2013, almost a week, less than 2 years ago. I think it was around the 20th of November that Vitalik published the paper. Very shortly after, he met up with Gavin, who published the blue paper, and there was lots of synergy in between both of them. Then in January of 2014, Vitalik announced to the world Ethereum in Miami. Shortly thereafter, they started the test bed and the proof of concept for Ethereum. And then following that, the well-known sale that happened in July and August of last year. And then following that, they formed SDEV, which is the group that started to develop the core technology pieces. And almost to the day, a year ago, they had the Dev Zero in Berlin. And this is the group of people that were at the Dev Zero. And this is the core, really, and the extension of the core group that has been very instrumental in developing the early technologies that we know about today. And how many of you can see themselves in this picture? Here's a big blow up. Can you raise George? We really owe them a big round of applause because they are the ones that started Ethereum, really. This brings me to where Ethereum is today, and that is part of the narrative. What makes it really interesting is that Ethereum is more than one thing today, and that is, this is the most important slide. If there's one thing you want to remember is what's on this slide. We all know about the foundation. That's kind of how it started. And a few months ago, a year ago for sure, everything was part of the foundation. The foundation was doing everything. And then suddenly, a lot of things started to come out into the ecosystem. So the second thing that Ethereum is, when you think of Ethereum, the number one being the foundation, yes. Number two is the network. In July, the blockchain became live. So the second thing that Ethereum is this live network. Hundreds of nodes, eventually thousands of nodes. It's out in the wild. The third thing that Ethereum is a set of technologies. All of the core, extended, and third-party technologies that are being developed are also part of Ethereum, but they are distinct from the network per se, and some of them are distinct from the foundation, and all of these pieces are growing. Fourthly, what is very interesting is that the ecosystem, a very vibrant ecosystem, is forming around the first three parts. And if you look at the list of sponsors, it is a microcosm of the types of companies and organizations that are part of this ecosystem, including companies like Consensus that are building applications and offering services to companies, including companies like Microsoft that are partnering with Ethereum technologies, startups like Augur, and VCs that are supporting the ecosystem. And that is a very important aspect, a very important part of the Ethereum story. And finally, it's the users. It's really about users, it's about customers. So I'm lumping users and customers together here. Yes, the developers are users, but we want more end users and we want more customers as well. So these five pieces really are what Ethereum is today. And each one of them is vibrant, each one of them is growing, and each one of them is contributing to the whole. So that is what you have to remember. Ethereum is no longer just Ethereum. It's a lot more to it. And a good testament to this is what's happening in the marketplace. So we can talk about, yeah, what we're doing, but then really the test is what happens in the marketplace. Some of you have seen this landscape that I've done about 3 weeks ago. And what I did there, I mapped all of the companies that I knew that were involved in the blockchain space in the financial services. And there's close to 200 companies on this space. And yes, we see Ethereum at the bottom, but really, do you know where Ethereum is on this chart? It is almost everywhere. Directly and indirectly, in most of these segments, you talk about capital markets, there is Clearmatics there. You talk about the banks, we heard about the banks implementing Ethereum. You talk about trading, you talk about middleware, software development, consensus, others have forked Ethereum or using parts of Ethereum. Everybody is developing on Solidity. Solidity is going to become the standard for doing smart contracts. It's easier than anything else out there, so why not use it? So that is a good testament to really to Ethereum's footprint increasing into the marketplace. Part of my job when I blog is I try to explain the blockchain to non-technical people. And I came up with this infographic earlier this week where I explain it in terms of what it is, what it enables, its impact, and where it's targeting this impact. I don't have to talk to you about what it is and what it enables because you are the ones that are building these things. But I would say to you, if you are mostly a technical and developer kind of oriented audience, I would say start from the bottom up. When I talk to the business people, I try to make them understand the top and then let them go down to the impact. But if you are offering solutions to the marketplace, think about the bottom and then turn counterclockwise up, meaning decide about what industries you're going to go after. And the most important thing here is that the promise of the blockchain, it's about reengineering, really. The reason why it's hard, it's okay to try a few proofs of concepts, but the harder projects are going to take a little bit longer. And it is really about changing the process inside big companies, especially if the blockchain is going into bigger companies. And that could be one way, or sometimes they want to do something different so that they don't disturb the old processes. It's really about new value. It's a value exchange system. That is what the blockchain is in other terms. It is about putting any digital asset on the blockchain. Once you put it there, boom, it can move freely. It can be owned, re-owned, traded, sold, settled in seconds, not in 3 days, which is a very vexing problem that the banks have today. How many of you have heard of the Carlota Perez technological search cycle, which is used to illustrate what happens usually when new technology comes into play and how it gets adopted? And basically what she did is she linked the capital financial markets to the technology markets. And what she found out, she analyzed the last 100 years of these technology revolutions, and she found there were two major sides of this evolution. One was the installation phase, and then the deployment phase, the prosperity phase. And in between, there is this little gap where there's a bit of a crash sometimes, and where there's a reset, things go down a little bit, and then it moves up again. So a recent analogy is what happened with the internet in the year 2000. There was a bit of euphoria, 95 to 2000, crash, and then everything started to happen again, and then we are still living in good times in terms of the internet. I'm not predicting a crash in the blockchain space. I think Ethereum's evolution is going to be quite different, and this is my own rendition. This is me predicting what's going to happen with Ethereum in terms of adoption. And if you think about it today, in the last 2 years, it has been more or less about selling the vision. And we are now starting the build-out stage. We are building out tools, companies, frameworks, and so on. as we go forward, there's going to be more installations. There's going to be more deployment. It's going to accelerate suddenly when there's network effects, when we have 10,000 developers, when we have hundreds of dApps, when we have hundreds of customers. All of this is going to be a rolling ball effect. And then the vision realization, the vision of decentralized governance, of decentralized marketplaces, of decentralized applications disrupting, not just replacing. It's easier to replace, it's more difficult to disrupt and totally change the old systems. And we're going to see the whole variety of implementations. So this is what I see in the evolution of Ethereum. But to do that, there's five things I think that the ecosystem has to do, which is part of the narrative. We have to continue to build dApps, apps, smart contracts, services, applications, languages, frameworks, all of that. We're still at the beginning. We need to make it more rich so that the Ethereum ecosystem stays very strong. We need to continue winning customers and users, and you all have a part to play with it. We need more startups, not just in the business-to-business space, but also in the business-to-consumer space, so that we can hit and affect more consumers. And we have to think continuously, not just about being different, because we are different, Ethereum is different. What's also important is to understand how we are differentiated, not just being different. We win by being different in the way that we understand how we are differentiated from the other potential solutions out there. And not about saying anything bad about them, but more about emphasizing the differentiation factors that Ethereum brings to the fore. And finally, it's a bit of a weakness right now, do more marketing. I know a bit of that because I spent a lot of my life in marketing, but also the first 14 years, I worked for Hewlett-Packard. At the time where HP had very strong technology, and they were known for having quality products. This is like in the mid-80s to the early 90s. But they did not do very good marketing. The joke was that if HP were to sell sushi, they would call it dead cold fish. And some of the same thing is happening, but it's okay because it is driven in the Ethereum. The whole thing is being driven by developers, technologists, and they like to describe things by what they are. But let's put a bit of marketing pizzazz into the, not to just hype it, but just to explain it better. What marketing does is it brings clarity into the market. It brings a clarity of messaging. And if somebody understands something, then they will do something about it. But if somebody does not understand it, they will not do anything about it. So I would urge everybody involved in the Ethereum ecosystem to rethink how they are talking about what they are doing, not just in the technology terms, but also in the messaging terms of the benefits and what it does to the marketplace. So the point of my talk was about the narrative and what is the difference between a narrative and a story. A story has a beginning and an end, typically when we hear about it. But once in a while, there's a technology that comes along and the story is so powerful that it captures the imagination. It captures our imagination. And what happens when a story captures the imagination of everybody who listens to the story, then they start to take that story and make it their own. And that is really the power of the narrative. The internet has a very strong narrative, because if I asked each and every one of you, what do you do with the internet? And what is the internet for you? I will get a different answer, because each one of us has their own way of using the internet. I think the same thing is going to happen with Ethereum. It has such a strong narrative, and each one of us that is involved in the Ethereum ecosystem has their own story. So my hope and my challenge to you is take Ethereum and make it your own story, because the best is yet to come. Thank you very much. Yeah. Okay, so we have one or two questions. If
anyone wants to ask a question, maybe about how you could help communicate the narrative.
You believe everything I said then. Yes, there's one.
Okay, just to provoke you, so maybe it's just irrelevant to market Ethereum to a general audience because the only people who are concerned are developers, and it's the developers who need to develop the killer apps that will appeal to a wider audience. So why would we care about marketing of Ethereum?
It's a good question. I think both things have to happen, as we said a little bit in the panel previously. There is a bottoms up. The developers have to develop the applications and propagate them and deploy them and have users use them. And that creates a community of users, of stakeholders, of applications, and so on. But at the same time, there has to be some top-down clarity of messaging as well. So don't take marketing in the bad sense of the word. Marketing is clarity. All that you could remember about marketing that is important here is clarity of messaging. So just be clear about what you're doing, and it becomes a pull. If something is clear and you believe in it, then it pulls you towards doing something about it. So there's so much that the developers can do pushing it up from the bottom up. But you also want to do from the top down so they can be pulled by it. So it's a push-pull situation, I think. This is how most brands and most technologies work. I mean, take the Apple case. Of course, there's lots of support from the bottoms up, but Apple keeps reinforcing to us in their marketing how great of a brand they are. And I think it has to happen from both sides.
Maybe another question over here.
Yeah.
Hello?
Yes.
How's it going? So recently, JP Morgan, Morgan's CEO, Jamie Dimon, said that Bitcoin is cute now, but you know, when the DOJ comes and says that it's illegal, you know, that's the end of the story. Blythe Masters just, I think yesterday, said the same thing, that she fully agrees at the banking conference across the street here at the Central Bank of England. With this sort of rhetoric coming out of, you know, people leading major banks, that cryptographic tokens that may have value, they think will be banned by the government eventually. How do you counter that message in those spaces? What would your marketing suggestion be there? What would your reaction be to that sort of rhetoric?
So I couldn't hear very well the first part of what you were saying because the sound.
Oh, sure.
Maybe talk a little bit closer to the mic.
Sure.
So what is your question concisely? Messaging.
Messaging to people like Jamie Dimon, who recently said that he thinks you know, Bitcoin will just.
Got it. It's good that he said that. It means that he is scared. And I'm very encouraged that somebody as highly respected as Jamie Dimon is saying, no, it's not going to happen or whatever. That means it's going to happen, unfortunately. I listen to the market. The incumbents, unfortunately, will be defensive. I mean, I've seen this movie as well before, 20 years ago. For 3 years, the banks did not want to touch internet payments. Between 95, 96, 97, anything to do with electronic payments and credit cards on the internet had to happen via what was called an internet gateway. It was this other thing outside of the banks. They didn't want to touch it. And then suddenly in 98, boom, it started to happen. Unfortunately, the banks, some of them, are facing a situation right now. All of this innovation we see in fintech, like forget the blockchain, before the blockchain, all of this, all of the fintech innovation that has happened outside of the banks is because the banks did not innovate enough in the first 10 years of the internet. So we waited 10 years, all we got is online banking and online brokerage. Can you tell me any other innovation that your bank gave you? Up until 2004, maybe. That's all we had. So then all the fintech started to happen in the last 10 years. And I predict if the banks don't take the blockchain seriously, the same thing will happen with the blockchain. Yes, there will be some solutions that will help the banks in terms of mid-office and back-office. They will save some money. That's a big opportunity. But some of the blockchain-based applications will also challenge the banks as well. But that said, I'm a bit more encouraged. I'm seeing the banks taking the blockchain more seriously than they did back in 95. So they are very open, and they are doing better than what they did in 95 with the internet. Yes.
A fantastic presentation. How would you recommend startups who are targeting traditional financial institutions and doing work with financial institutions? Do you think they should be selling their products and services under the banner of you could become extinct in 5-10 years, or focus on the efficiencies and the cost savings, or perhaps both?
I think the question is if I recommend going after efficiencies versus other things, versus beyond the efficiencies. Is that the question? What narrative as a startup? I mean, it depends on your capabilities. The truth is that banks will, big companies, just not banks, let's not say, big companies are becoming more open to working with smaller companies and startups for small projects. But when it comes to bigger projects and deployments and mission critical, then they will tend to want to work with more established players, more or less, or bigger companies, like not a startup with 5 people. So they'll want to see a little bit more assurance that the company is going to be around. So I think working with if you have a banking partner, and a lot of the banks have what is called innovation departments now, and they are very open-minded. Like, find your partner, find your champion within that bank or within that big company, and let them be your champion internally. And experiment, and then go from there. But that's what I would suggest you do. And I think we're out of time. So thanks again.